final segment on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of JPR. I'm Jeffrey Riley. We begin with a warning that we'll be discussing sexual abuse of a child. So if that's a subject you'd prefer to avoid, we understand if you'd rather not listen. For the rest of you, we have a first-person story of abuse from a woman who put her thoughts down on paper and ended up publishing a book. Claudia Chotzen is the author of The Dark Room, a memoir of triumph. She once lived in Ashland. She returns to Ashland for an event at Bloomsbury Books Wednesday, July 17th at 7 p.m. Claudia Chotzen has had a varied career as an attorney, a law clerk, and a TV documentary producer. Claudia, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeff. It's good to be here.
So the book, The Dark Room, a memoir of triumph, starts with an acknowledgement of your seven siblings and your desire not to intrude upon their lives with your story. What made you decide to finally put this down on paper and publish the book?
So it took me years and years to decide to do that, Jeff. The number one priority I felt like was to protect their privacy and not intrude again on their lives, because we'd all lived through it together. But then finally, I got to be in my 60s and turning 70, and I thought, if I'm not going to tell my story now, when will I do it? And I hope that it's a story that will help inspire other people to know that they can change and grow, and that there can be good on the other side of darkness that they've experienced. So I finally said, this is what I've got to do with my life. And the interesting part of it is that all of my siblings have been so totally supportive of me. They've been cheering me on. So I waited a long time, and I'm glad I finally did it.
Well, speaking of good on the other side of darkness, both of your parents fled Nazi Germany. Was that life described much to you as a kid?
You know, it wasn't described sort of, you know, directly, but then there's a story in the book when I came home at 7 years old, and I was very excited because I had an assignment from our teacher to watch a TV program in the evening, and I was very excited and told my parents, we get to watch TV for homework tonight. And they said, great, what's the program about? And I said, it's about a man named Hitler. I was all excited. And I saw the blood just drain from both of their faces. And that was the point, I think, at too much of a young age, where they said, we can let you watch that show. We can't watch that show. And then they began to tell me all the story of what happened to all of their families and relatives in the Holocaust. And I remember just thinking, what on earth has happened? What did I unleash? And with details that, you know, were seared into me. And then I remember going into my bigger sister's room, my older sister's room, and saying, did you know about the man named Hitler? And she was 2 years older, so she was 9. And she said, oh, I did. And it's very serious. She said, we can never have too much fun in life, because we have to make up for all those people who died. And so it came at a very young age, but I don't think they really, you know, they were still in such a state of trauma, having just escaped the Holocaust themselves and having had so many relatives murdered in it, that I don't think, you know, they didn't really know how to tell their children about it. So,
and yet it's not like they approached their lives grimly. I mean, it's clear from the really first descriptions in the book that your mother was at least a colorful personality. Give a sketch there.
She's a very colorful personality. She was charismatic. She was physically beautiful. She was sort of, everybody called her a force of nature. Friends used to tell me, your mother's like a goddess. She walks into a room and everybody gathers around her. So she just was, you know, articulate and, you know, excited to be part of life. She was a professional photographer at a period in time when, you know, women didn't usually have their own careers. She was also, you know, raising us. She was also involved in the civil rights movement, very strongly involved in Seattle, Washington. And we lived in an all-black, the central area neighborhood of Seattle. And they really wanted, both my parents really wanted us to not know discrimination like they had ended up being on the receiving end of in Germany. So they had just, you know, strong messages to us about fighting for justice and speaking up, going, you know, to anti-Vietnam War marches. So everything, we were all very politically active. And they, in a sense, she was an icon in the Seattle community, very much of a local hero. So the fact that she was sexually abusing me at home in the nights was such a contradiction that I think nobody in the world would have believed. She was, you know, such an outspoken and public figure. Both of my parents were.
Claudia Chotzen is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the author of The Dark Room, a memoir of triumph. Claudia presents the book at an event at Bloomsbury Books in Ashland, 7 p.m. on Wednesday. So let's talk about the treatment of you. Mommy of the night, as you call her, did things mommy of the daytime did not.
That's exactly right. It was a very, you know, sort of a very segmented existence for me. I really compartmentalized the abuse because it wasn't spoken about in the day. In the day, everything was chaotic and busy, and we were, you know, high achievers, and we were very sort of public, as I just said, in the community. So the mommy of the night was something that I just became very used to. And, you know, I would be deeply in my dreams and starting from a very young age, feel the weight of my mother's body on top of me. And then she would, you know, rise and put her hands everywhere. And it just became something where I learned, Jeff, to just leave my body. And I remember, you know, being up in the ceiling in the corner of the room, just watching my body. And then, you know, knowing that at some point it would end. And it just became a routine in my life with, you know, I think I knew that it was something wrong and, you know, bad was happening at a very early age, but because there was nobody to tell and because it was so reinforced in the daytime, my father was, you know, deeply obsessed with my mother, very smitten with her, in love with her. So he would tell us at least once a week when we would wake up, you have the best mommy in the world. And so as a little child, you know, that's what the mommy, you know, my mommy would, you know, when she would say she loved me while she was molesting me, there's no way to know how to make that any different. And so I just lived in this sort of dual existence of the mommy of the night and the mommy of the day, just like you said.
Did your father have any inkling, do you think? Do you know now what he knew?
I know he did know. And because when I confronted them, which was all the way in my 40s, and asked, you know, how he could let it happen, he essentially said that he left all the parenting up to Carla, to my mother. I think that on some deep, deep level, Jeff, he was so afraid of losing her that he never protected us. He didn't stand up for us. And, you know, he was a great gentleman, a lovely guy. I still considered him my safe harbor when I was growing up, because he was so much safer than she was. And yet, you know, he didn't protect his children. And I know looking back that there's no way that he could not have known what was going on, because they built me a little closet bedroom right next to theirs. And she left every night and she made loud noises when she had her orgasms on top of me. And so there's just absolutely no way that he didn't know. And he admitted as much and just essentially said, you know, I didn't want to lose her. And I left the parenting decisions up to her. And as you know from the book, it's not just the molesting, but maybe many other parenting decisions of who she invited into the home to be our babysitters, things like that too. So I know my father, you know, he knows he knew, and he let us know that later in later life.
Claudia Chotzen is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the author of The Dark Room, a memoir of triumph. We are discussing some pretty difficult issues, and if you need to get away, we understand. Claudia will be talking at Bloomsbury Books in Ashland tomorrow, Wednesday evening at 7. You know, you tell us in the book that your mom celebrated the beauty of the naked human body, you know, took pictures of children unclothed, which would be probably illegal today, took the whole family to a nudist camp in the summer. How did you feel about your own body and your worth as a person during this period of your life?
I thought that the whole purpose of my body, Jeff, was to be there to fulfill my mother's needs. I felt like a shell. And I talk about in the book how much I dissociated. I would say even to a doctor, I remember when my mother took me to a doctor at 8 years old and he put needles in, poked me and said, can you feel this? And I would say, you know, yes, I can feel that, but I'm not in my body. You know, today I think doctors, physicians or teachers would know that that's the sign of a child being abused. But I don't think they knew that in the 1950s and 1960s. And so to me, I just believe that the purpose of my body was to lie there on the bed and fulfill her needs, and that was what I had come in the world to do. And it was my job. It was just, you know, I left my body, and I was just to lie there and take it for year after year after year until the consciousness started to seep in, not until I was a teenager, that maybe this isn't how all children, you know, have a purpose at night. So, yeah, that's the answer to that. It was, my body was for my mother.
So your mother was a bit of an activist, you know, certainly out there demonstrating for the rights of people. At some point, did that consciousness from what she was doing on behalf of other people enter your mind about representing yourself that way?
You know, it certainly represented, you know, I certainly felt it for the other people in the world. I mean, we watched, you know, all the civil rights. We went to the demonstrations. We chanted for equality and for integration in the schools. She'd put on a school boycott for the Seattle schools that's still very well known, in order to have them become the central area schools be integrated. But as far as being able to stand up to her, that took years and years, just because I think, as I mentioned about the role of my body, I thought my whole role in life was just to be subservient and give her what she needed, because if she didn't, she would become angry. And of course, my worst fear was that if I wasn't a docile, acquiescent kind of person, that I would be kicked out of the family. And the other code that we were told all the time was that nobody has a family like we have. Our family is everything. And without our family, we have nothing. And I'm sure some of that came from the Holocaust, too, of sticking together and not speaking up. And so, yeah, I never dreamed of speaking up. And then when I tried to, when I got into 15 and 16 years old, and it was just, I said, get off of my body, then she would turn it on herself and she would become very hurt. How can you hurt me this way? I'm only trying to love you. So I was just a mixed up mess, because the last thing I wanted to do was hurt her. I have journals and journals about how much I love my mommy and notes and letters I've written to her from the years that, I never want to hurt you. I mean, that's almost like I was, brainwashed, the Stockholm syndrome. So it took years and years to find my voice and to speak up.
And probably a lot of therapy, too, I'm guessing.
Lots of therapy, lots of excellent therapy. Really wonderful therapists who have, specialists in sexual abuse, who helped me, to really face it, and my wonderful husband Hap, who, sort of knew from when he met me when I was 22 years old that this, that I don't know all about this, but that I know that I have huge issues and that I leave my body and I don't want to anymore. And so he's just stood by as the entire story has unfolded. And yes, the answer is excellent therapy through the years. In Ashland, Oregon, was one of the very big, places I really began to work on it, because we moved to Ashland when our older son was 18 months old. And it was really having my children, Jeff, that made me wake up and realize, we were living in Hawaii, which is where my parents lived. And when I realized that this could happen again, I had to really finally, this was in my early 30s, wake up and realize that I have to stand up for my children, and I cannot let this go on. And that's when we moved to Ashland. And that's when I began to do the really deep, serious work with some wonderful therapists there. About what had happened and protecting my own children so that I could break the cycle, which I've done, which is very exciting.
Yeah, what a relief to look at it in past tense. And what do you hope people, we have about a minute left. What do you hope people take from your book, Claudia?
What a great question, Jeff. I hope that they take that, if you're in a really dark place, which has felt like my entire childhood was, and you feel hopeless, hang in there and know that there are people that can help, that you can get out, and that there can be not just love on the other side, but light and joy. I mean, my life now, I call it a joy fest. It's just, there's so much love filling it, and so many dear friends and family, and now new people that I'm meeting as I've come forth with the book. So that my message would be, don't give up, even when it feels like there is no hope, because there is hope, and there are people to help you too.
The book is called The Dark Room, A Memoir of Triumph. No question, there are parts of it that are difficult to read, but you can hear in Claudia's voice the fact that she emerged the other side into a much brighter day. Claudia Chotzen will be appearing at Bloomsbury Books in Ashland tomorrow evening, Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. Claudia Chotzen, thank you so much for sharing this with us on the Jefferson Exchange.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you so much for the interview.
You bet. Take care. And that'll do it for
you, too.
You bet. That'll do it for today's exchange. JeffExchange.org is our website. We upload all segments there and to podcasting sites like Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Angela Decker of JPR News is our senior producer. Zach Beagle is at the controls today. Maxwell and Terry Longshore composed our theme music. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Please join us next time on the Jefferson Exchange. Stay safe and have a great day.